Welcome to Download here on WGN and WGNRadio.com. Well, the new film, The Oath, is out in theaters this weekend. The comedy is an instant holiday classic, but it's less about food, travel, or in-laws. It's about politics.
Well, what happened was I was leaving my office, and a coworker decided to hit me with her car.
Oh, my God.
Thank you. Yeah, I broke my clavicle and two bones my right foot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Thank you so much, Lydia Wong.
What? Okay, well,
I'm sorry?
Well, that's not...
I'm sorry, that's not appropriate. What?
Chris.
No, you said her last name in a way that implied that Asian women are bad drivers. That is not the case, and that is offensive. I'm sorry.
I absolutely did not say her name in a way that implied that.
There was an emphasis on the Wong.
There was no emphasis.
Well, hey, and by the way, some of them are bad drivers.
Percentage-wise, who do you think gets in more car accidents in this country? White men or Asian women?
Asian women.
No, Dad, no. White men. I wouldn't have said it if it was Asians.
The Oath stars Tiffany Haddish, Carrie Brownstein, Nora Dunn, and my guest today, Ike Barinholtz, who also wrote and directed the film. Ike is known to many as an actor starring in The Mindy Project and films like Neighbors, Blockers, and Suicide Squad, but also a writer and now a director. But to many Chicagoans, Ike is, well, Ike.
And I'm also your friend.
That's
your
right.
Old friend.
He grew up here. He spent his formidable years doing improv at clubs like I.O. and Annoyance, Second City, and continues to be a huge booster for Chicago. Ike Barinholtz, welcome back to the Download.
My friend, my old friend, Justin. How are you, pal?
We've known each other probably now...
97.
Yeah. So it's amazing to watch. And I am so proud of you to watch you on the screen. And I got to watch the film with a bunch of... critics in a
yep.
screening room.
Yeah.
And there were so many times where I inappropriately giggled longer than I should because I was just like, I think this is hilarious.
You know,
like,
the dark.
Then there's some points too in the movie where there's a balance between it gets serious
yeah.
and then it gets funny. And I was laughing at the wrong parts, but I just, most of it because I knew you.
I feel like in this landscape we're in, it's hard to make things just funny or just scary now. Like you look at Twitter, right? And you'll see like a tweet
right.
of like, I don't know, like a dog biting a guy in the butt and his pants. Fall down, you laugh hard, and then the next tweet you see something horrible like something that's going on in the government, you start crying. So I wanted to kind of make a film that illustrates this kind of landscape we're living in now, where it's a roller coaster of emotion every day.
That's easy to write, probably easy to act in.
Yeah.
Is it hard to direct?
It was definitely tough. We didn't have a ton of time to shoot it, and you know, I knew, like you said, when I wrote it, like, it feels like it works on the page, and then we're shooting it, oh, it feels like it's working, but it's not until you see kind of the editor's assembly,
right.
and we breathed a sigh of relief, because we knew we had a lot of work to do, but it worked, and the tone was working on a basic structural level.
As a director, is that what the director does? Obviously running a set and almost being the manager of everything
yep.
that has to happen, and obviously shooting in such a quick amount of time, but is it also about controlling the tone and making sure that you to get the right shots and the right voice that you want it?
Absolutely, especially for something like this. After I showed it to a few friends, Jordan Peele, hold on, just drop that name. Jordan made a great point where he's like, look, you're doing this thing where you're asking the audience to move back and forth. And there's some times where you're making it a little too scary here, a little too funny here. So it really was kind of being a cop on the tone and making sure that it was really what I had in my head. And yeah, for better or worse, that's what it is.
Where does this idea come from, The Oath?
So it was, well, the whole movie came about after the, I don't know if you guys heard about the election in 2016,
yeah,
presidential election. Yeah. You heard about that?
Oh, I thought you were talking about state senator was a big.
Oh,
was big
yeah,
here.
That was
yeah.
a big one. Yeah, they're all in jail now. But it was that Thanksgiving. My folks come out from Chicago, and we were having this nice dinner. And after dinner, me and my brother and my mom got in this really nasty argument. We started yelling at each other and blaming each other. And I woke up the next day, I was like, oh my God, we were all on the same side. We all voted for the same person. What's happening at other tables around the country? And as I started talking to friends of mine and hearing their horror stories, I knew that the kind of the arena of that holiday family table was changed forever, and we could really tell some funny stories. And then as far as the oath element, I knew I wanted something bigger and this
right.
big kind of looming government crisis. And I love dystopic films. I love like Children of Men. And I always wonder, how did it happen? And so we kind of came up with this concept of loyalty. And then after we were like written it and I was shooting it, all these things started happening in real life. Trump, pinned down Comey and was like, are you going to be loyal? Are you loyal? And we had something called National Loyalty Day and all these weird things. It was like life was echoing art,
yeah.
which was already echoing life. It was
well,
weird.
that's the brilliance of the film, too. It's a not too distant future or maybe it's an alternative reality.
I just checked Twitter. Yeah. It's the past.
It's
it
the
happened
past.
In, while we were on air. They've dropped the mandate. So I have to go to a government center and sign.
It's the film. And it is. I've known you to be political.
Yeah.
And I always loved it because we had a real connection because it was a lot about Chicago politics.
Yeah, that's always the committeeman. Not even alderman. Committeeman.
And that's a different kind of politics. But when did you discover your voice being someone who wanted to get into the political realm?
You know, I mean, I really, my dad was friends, as you know, with Don Kahn, a.k.a. Ron Kahn, the committeeman of the 43rd Ward. So I used to go to, you know, on election day, I'd go to polling places. I loved it. I loved not just the superficial stuff like the food, but I loved watching the, you know, candidates talk to their, you know, possible constituents. And it's always been in there in me. But, you know, I really do feel like a lot of people in the last 3-4 years have suddenly been like, oh, wait, I have to pay attention to politics. Right. And, you know, I kind of do it in a couple ways. You know, the oath is one that I think is a little more refined and, you know, telling a story. And then I also will, like, tweet at Mitch McConnell, you coward. So it's definitely in my head pretty much 24/7.
It's so fun to think about because you are political, and I've known you to be that, but this is a different realm in the way that you could be a Hollywood, being a Hollywood star that you are right now, you could not be political and no one would care. Like, it wouldn't be like, I wonder what Ike thinks about the Supreme Court confirmation hearings. I mean, you could be anything you want to be. So it is interesting that you choose to. I mean, I saw in some posters that are coming up for this tour for The Oath, writer, director, and activist.
Yeah.
Like Baron Holtz.
Yeah.
They got you. They're pinning you on activist.
Activist. I am an activist now. First of all, I just want to say I'm a pro Kavanaugh guy all the way. Love him. What seems like a nice, measured, calm guy who has nothing to hide. That is sarcasm in case you can't tell on the radio. Yeah, you know, I throw it all out there. And there are, you know, people in the kind of public realm who I think choose to kind of keep their opinions quiet, but I don't know how you can do that unless you're so apolitical it doesn't matter to you. But you're seeing everyone now. Like Captain America the other day had like a tweet storm about like, this is wrong. And it's like, it's so permeating now everything we do. And it's not just, it used to be politics was a separate thing, but now it's bleeding into everything. It's bleeding into football. It's bleeding into TV and stuff. And it's just now it's more a part of the American landscape. And to me, it's just such an absurd, rich target that I feel like it's really, we need to be mining it more.
Do you find that it's, obviously, I mean, we're at this point with Trump that everything has gotten completely absurd.
Yeah.
And as comedians, you look at it and you're just like, I don't even know what to do with this.
Yeah.
Do you find it different than say, living through the Clinton Lewinsky, living through George W. Bush and the weapons of mass destruction and that whole thing, even sort of what happened with the Congress against Barack Obama. I mean, there's a lot that has played out in our lifetime.
Yeah, well,
but this is different.
This is totally different. I mean, I was no fan of George W. Bush, and I think Obama and Clinton had some problems too, but what we're seeing now is just like a complete dissolving of, and I know some people don't like this word, but our norms. And I think when you have a president who is so kind of absurd and cartoonish and you know, says things like, I have a brain. Why did he say a brain? What is he, Italian? I have a brain. We're just not used to seeing something like this. And I think, again, it always lived in that political realm, but Trump is not a politician and he doesn't know that realm. So he has to break through in a new way, which is like, you know, I just was with Antonio Sabato Jr. What a great guy. And it's just the word absurd is something that just you feel like, especially living in the West Coast, you wake up to a fresh hell every morning because homeboy's been up for 3 hours working those thumbs on the toilet. And now we're like, what has happened? So I think it's very difficult to not look at this as a very different era.
Well, let's put politics aside. Talk about The Oath. Stars tremendous actors like Tiffany Haddish,
yes.
Nora Dunn, Carrie Brownstein. Great to see Carrie Brownstein.
So great.
But I want to talk about your brother.
Yeah,
John.
Baby.
What was it like doing a movie, directing a movie with your brother, John, another improviser, and you guys, of course, have taken L.A. by storm. But what's it like? What's it like to not only direct your brother, but to be opposites in this film?
I knew that right when I was breaking the story, I knew that the kind of central combatants were going to be me and my brother's this character. And right away, I was like, okay, I got to cast my brother. He's a great actor. Like, I saw him back when he was through Steppenwolf Training Center, and he did This Is Our Youth, and he was so great. And it's hard to get those reps in L.A., especially when you're on a sitcom, small part. But I knew there were a lot of great actors I could have cast to play my brother, but none of them I had 35 years of arguing with. You know, I threw a bag of change at him, a little change purse in 1989. I gave him a black eye, and I told my parents I didn't do it. And he was like, I saw you do it. So I knew I could pull from that emotion and stuff. And I knew I could kind of push him. And there's moments. My mom saw the movie and she's like, I know there are moments where you're really being mean to Jonathan. And I was like, yeah, but I paid him. I think if you pay your siblings, you can be a little mean right. to them. But it was so great just to have him there and really, yeah, use all the stuff that we've been through over the last 35 years to my advantage.
How much of what, I mean, you could push your brother. You could yeah. push him in that performance, yep. and he's great in the film. Yep. And you guys together, when you get at each other.
It's fun.
Yeah, and yeah. how much of that is sticking to the script and the stuff that you've written, and how much of it is letting you be the Barinholtz brothers?
You know, the script, my kind of theory is for a movie like this, where there are a lot of, you have to kind of weave in plot lines and story lines within, you know, the kind of the chuffa and stuff. So I kind of told the cast, look, let's like stick to the script for the first two takes, but then when you're watching arguments, you need improv. You need that live kind of jolt. So there's a lot of lines in the movie. I don't know. We can't really swear on this, but there's Tiffany Haddish refers to someone as a trash blank, and that's her. I could never write that line. I don't have that part of my brain wired. So, you know, I found these little great moments, especially in editing, when I'm not myself and when we're shooting it and I look in editing, I'm like, oh my God, my brother just did this crazy face and stuff. So I did give them a little bit of a chance to flex those muscles, and it really paid off.
The one thing about you and your ability to improvise, and you've been one of the best improvisers I've ever seen.
Thanks, buddy.
You are aggressive. Yeah. On stage.
Yeah.
And your argument, your ability to argue, when you and Susan Messing get on stage together and you argue, yes. there's not, to everyone listening to this, you have fine, if you ever get a chance to see it, they'll be paying big bucks. It'll be at the Lincoln Center for thousands of dollars to see Ike and Susan argue. But there is there's a talent and a skill to it, because you can be argumentative and you can be an improviser who can, you know, to sort of get aggressive and mm-hmm. be mean. But there's something about learning how to argue and still respect the art form that is improv that
yeah.
you have somehow mastered. What's your take on that?
I think initially when I first started back in like 96, you know, I think like a lot of young male improvisers, your MO is I'm going to be the angriest, loudest, most blue person on stage. So I always kind of had that. But then I learned, you know, and I really credit my teachers, is like, you can still play that energy and you could still get, you know, that character out, but you can build the scene and you can, you know, don't shut their argument down. Let it build and let them, you know, set you up. And it's basically, you know, I hate to say it, but it really goes back to yes and, you know what I mean? Like, that's the whole thing in an argument. If you say, no, you're lying, you know, that's kind of closing the door. But if you say yes and you don't even know anything because you got kicked out of college, you know what I mean?
Yeah,
then
right,
we're cooking a little bit. So I think taking that kind of normal energy I have on stage, which is a little aggro and a little kind of trying to be in control, I think for a film like this, it really helped us out a lot.
For you, I think of a lot of the people that you came up with from Chicago, and I think of Seth Meyers
yep.
and Josh Myers and a lot of the improvisers who now are household names. You're getting more and more people that came up that are now entertaining the masses. Do you think there's something coincidental about that? Do you think that it comes from the training of what you guys learned how to do as young people, both in Chicago, but Boom Chicago, other places that gets you ahead?
Yeah, I think, I mean, a couple of things. First of all, I do think Chicago is the greatest grounds for training, because Chicago audiences are fun, but they're tough. They're not like, you know, people in LA who are like, I loved it. It was great. All of it. You know, Chicago, you got to work. And there's an honesty to the city, and there's an honesty to the art form that we get in Chicago. And that kind of late 90s arena in Chicago was just a great moment, where you could go any night and see Tina Fey or Jack McBray or Jason Sudeikis. We just had so many great, Rachel Dratch,
Jordan Peele.
We just had all these just young, kind of burgeoning talented people who just kind of landed here at the same time. And I think if you ask them too, they do bring it back to Chicago. They do bring it back to that kind of, you know, IO, get on that stage, you have no idea what's going to happen, but have no fear.
And it also predates what happens now, because Chicago is now known culturally in improv and
yep.
comedy as a place you have to go, almost
yes.
mandatory. You have to come here and
yep.
go to Second City Conservatory. But it was still limited at that time. It wasn't the whole world of comedy knew you had to come to Chicago. There were people that were choosing to come here.
Yeah. It you know, we knew that, you know, the ultimate goal was to get on the Second City main stage, and then the loftiest goal was SNL. But we still did feel like it we were special, and it was just that special that we were here. And now it is kind of permeated, where people are like, oh, which is good. You want people to be like, I want to be in comedy. I'm going to come to Chicago. Like, right. You cannot pick a better training ground. Like, it will get you ready, whether you go to New York or LA or anywhere. It's the perfect place to get your feet wet.
The other thing that I always felt like connected with you was that you were from Chicago.
Yeah.
Meaning a lot of people, as you just said, will come in from other places to study in Chicago. And they may not be so specifically tuned into what's happening in the city.
Yeah.
How much did it help you in your career and navigating the Chicago improv scene that you knew Chicago?
So much. Because Chicagoans do love a good local reference. And you could be up there and all of a sudden you start a scene off. And you're like, excuse me, where's the manager of this Aldi? Because I bought these beans and they have been expired. And people right away are like, hey, Aldi, the stock up store. I know that place. So just kind of having a frame of reference for local stuff was great. And also just having that Chicago attitude, I feel like. It's that weird combination of really nice but also kind of tough. And, I really leaned on a lot of references those first couple of years to get some easy laughs.
Let me ask you this, because I remember you getting on Mad TV. And I remember that you and Josh were doing the two-man show.
Yeah.
And I also remember a lot of conversations about, you know, this is what you're hoping is going to happen to your career, and this is where you're going. And you've had such a tremendous, tremendous couple years here. But before that, when it was still, you're in there with five other people and you didn't get it this time, Mike, or you know what, we want to be your agent, but we're not sure, blah, blah, blah. Yeah. Talk about, how did you get past that?
After Mad TV, I was kind of like, okay, I'm ready to be the star of my own sitcom now. So where do I sign up? And it's so not like that. And I really had three very long, hard years where just no one would cast me. And, you know, I never was like, I'm going to give up, but I really fell back on writing because that was what I, you know, kind of came to LA to do. And I have this great writing partner, Dave Stassen from Chicago. And we really kind of were like, let's recommit, because no one's going to hire me as an actor. Maybe they'll hire me to write something for them. So we really doubled down and we wrote these terrible movies. And then finally we wrote one that we sold. And that was like the greatest thing, because that all of a sudden validated us as writers. And then I still had another year, and it really wasn't until Danny McBride cast me on Eastbound and Down where I got a little bit of love, and people were like, oh, you're actually kind of funny. Oh, you're not Russian? Oh, interesting. I thought you were born in Moscow. But it was a tough slog, but I knew I wasn't going to bail, and I just kind of stuck to it.
You, and my final question here just is about relationships, because you have always not only been someone who has been talented in writing and acting, but you have kept your relationships. And you mentioned Danny McBride, and mm-hmm. you got relationships with guys like Seth Rogen mm-hmm. and other places, but also every project that you work on seems to continue. Is that the key for actors who are going into Hollywood, to think about those relationships and recognize that this is lifelong? It's not just one project?
Absolutely. Absolutely. I mean, I've been very lucky where the people I have worked with are people I want to continue a dialogue with. And I think that is, again, bringing it back to Chicago. Chicagoans love neighborhoods. Right. And what I've tried to do is create my own little neighborhood in L.A. And like a Chicagoan, I'll tell you the name of the neighborhood is not what you think it is. It's something else. But I think that kind of sense of community, sometimes in L.A. it gets very insular and people are like, I'm just going to do my own thing and hope the next person finds me. But to me, again, I had these great people who I looked up to and were nice and fun. And to me, it was like, it was less about like, oh, I'm going to be friends with them and continue the friendship because maybe they'll work with me again. And more just like, they're just nice people who I like and they're real. And I've been very lucky along the way.
You were taping this before you do your big premiere that's at ArcLight.
Tonight.
What's it feel like? I mean, sold out. It's all Chicago. I mean, running into people this weekend, they're like, hey, I'm going to see Ike. There's a lot of people coming out that know you beyond Hollywood that really want to celebrate your success.
My grandmother's coming. She's coming down from Skokie, 94. She's going to be there. It's great, man. This is just like a little homecoming. You know what I mean? Like, first of all, I do think this movie will resonate with Chicagoans. You know what I mean? We don't take a lot of BS. And to come and get to see guys that I went to grade school with, my friend who was in the hospital when I was born, and people I did improv with, I'm really looking forward to it, man. Can't wait.
Ike Barinholtz is the writer, director, and star of the film The Oath, which is out in theaters this weekend. Ike, pleasure seeing you, man. Thanks,
brother,
for coming through.
Old times. Good to see you, Justin.
Congrats on the success, man.